Hello, friends. It's Paul White. It's the DDP. It's the 29th day of November. Thanks for joining me. We are off and running in the Genesis 15 account of God's covenant conversation with Abraham. It's going to advance from a conversation into a full-blown bloodshed covenant. That's coming up. But today I want to focus on this moment leading up into verse 6, that famous 15:6. That's probably one of the most pivotal moments of Old Testament theology into a New Testament understanding. 15:6 is, "And he believed in the Lord, and he accounted it to him for righteousness." That phrase will be the real fulcrum around the Paul argument of righteousness by faith that he'll start to establish in Romans 4. We're going to look at that argument a little bit later in the week. I want to take a look at from the second through the sixth verses, because as we ended yesterday, I told you that there's a gap between the beginning of the Abraham call in Genesis 12 and the declaration of his righteousness in Genesis 15. What I didn't talk about is why that gap exists. We've learned some things along with Abraham in this journey. We've learned that sometimes you have to leave where you are, and you have to leave behind what you were in order to go do what you're going to do. We've learned that faith is essentially a call to adventure. It is God calling you into another life and not pushing you, not abandoning you, calling you. That up until Abraham, God walked with men, but he walked with men on man's terms. He walked with man on man's ground. With Abraham, he calls Abraham to come walk with him on his terms. Thus, faith enters the vernacular, and it is a true response to the call of God. We watched Abraham build an altar to sort of stake himself on a revelation, and then we watched him drift away from that. We then watched him return to that, and with Abram, we learned that we need to reconnect to the place, not that we are comfortable, but to the place that we are useful. We learned that the bread and the wine have been redeemed through an encounter with a heavenly priest. We learned that giving is a response to the gift received. As you receive from him, you give back to him. We've learned that one of the reasons people are frustrated in their giving is because they're being told to give in order to get, which is the opposite of the Abrahamic story. Abraham didn't give to get. Abraham gave because he had gotten. If we could teach people what they have received and how they are to receive it freely, then people would give in response to what's been given to them. And what we learned yesterday is that God is our shield. He is who guards us. And he calls himself Abraham's exceeding great reward. But as we ended the podcast, I told you Abraham rebuts this. Verse 2, "But Abram said, Lord God, what will you give me, seeing I go childless, and the heir of my house is Eliezer of Damascus?" First of all, it's interesting that Abram could even dare ask, "What will you give me, seeing I go childless?" God's given him everything. Abram really doesn't have anything God hasn't given him. But Abram is still not totally convinced. This is why there's no declaration of Abraham's righteousness in all of this. Abram, everything I just recounted for you, there's still no declaration that Abraham is righteous. He's answered the call of faith. He's building his altars. He's receiving his communion. He's paying his tithe. He's doing all of these things, but there's no declaration of righteousness. And Abraham is starting to grow frustrated. He doesn't really know where he stands with God. This is such a powerful thing. Building the altar, coming out of your father's house, building the altar, rescuing your relatives, cutting off the things that are no longer good for you, partaking in the bread and the wine, the giving of the tithe, all of these things, and yet Abraham isn't convinced of the inheritance, because works do not convince you of inheritance. The sacraments do not convince you of inheritance. They are byproducts of it. The disciplines of the believer are not to convince us of the inheritance or make us righteous. They are to convince us we already are. The 15th chapter of Genesis is valuable because Abram argues with God, the third verse, "Look, you've given me no offspring. Indeed, one born in my house is my heir. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him and said, this one shall not be your heir." We're talking about Eliezer of Damascus. Eliezer, by the way, is the Hebrew rendering of the Greek word that will be Lazarus, which is why Lazarus goes to Abraham's bosom in the story of the rich man and Lazarus, not because Abraham's bosom is a place in the heart of the earth or Lazarus was a real guy, but because Lazarus is Abraham's servant. Lazarus is being treated by the hierarchy of Israel as if he doesn't matter, but in the end, the servant ends up in the bosom. The person you stepped on ends up meaning the most in the heart of the Father. There's a lot of imagery there that gets picked up by Jesus. But God promises him, this one's not going to be your heir. One will come from your own body. That's going to be your heir. He brought him outside and said, "Look now toward heaven and count the stars, if you're able to number them." And he said to him, "So shall your descendants be." And he believed in the Lord, and he accounted it to him for righteousness. At that moment, finally, Abraham is counted righteous. And there's a reason why the text brings this out. Because if we're not careful, we'll think that righteousness is what happens if we journey. Righteousness is what happens if we build an altar. Righteousness is what happens if we cut off Lot or rescue our own or eat the communion or pay the tithe. But the Genesis 15 account exists to show us that righteousness is counted to us because we believe, not because we do. None of the doing is wrong, but none of the doing makes you righteous. We might miss this in this story if not for the Apostle Paul. Tomorrow, we're going to give you the essay edition. I think you're going to enjoy it. The next day, we're going to go into Paul's interpretation of Genesis 15:6. We're also going to see how Paul's interpretation of 15:6 differed from James's. This is an important journey. We'll start that in 2 days. Essay coming up tomorrow. See you then.